This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of January 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll discuss the cash grain market with Ben Pruce out at the Anderson's Everly, Iowa facility. And we'll take up the weather forecast, too. That with Ed Kieser, agricultural meteorologist. He'll help us understand what's been happening in South America as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. On this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day in the corn pit down a penny and a quarter at $3.70. The May at $3.78.5 at a penny and a quarter lower, a penny and a half lower. And July at $3.86 down 1.75. December corn down 2 cents at $4.75. That March, by the way, I think I said was a penny and a quarter lower. It was down 1.5 at $3.70. Soybeans at $9.61 were down 7.25 cents. The May at $9.67.75, 7 lower. July 9.72 3/4 down 7. The August at 9.72 as well, 6 3/4 lower. In November, or your new crop soybeans down 5.5 cents at $9.45 3/4. January at next year, 9.51 1/2, down 5.25 for the day. Bean meal futures finished the nearby at $3.29.90, down $8. The bean oil at $30 even, up 46 cents for the day. Soft red winter wheat in Chicago at 5.02 3/4 in the lead March, a nickel lower. July futures for the harvest month down 5.5 cents at $5.11.5. Kansas City hard red, $5.40 1/4 cents, down 3 3/4 in the March. July at 5.46 1/4, down 7 1/4. Live cattle futures at $154.85, up $1.32.5 in the Fabs. April at $152.10, they're $1.60 higher. The feeder cattle on the afternoon at $205.35, finished $1.77.5 higher. April at $205.75, up $1.55 in the lean hogs today. $67.65 in the February, 90 cents lower. April at $72.32.5, down 87.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The crude oil trading the March at $47.25 a barrel, a gain today of $2.72. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.71.5, that's 9 7/10 cents higher. And the RBOB price of gasoline at $1.44.5, up 9 2/10. Natural gas for the day at $2.68.6, that's 3 3/10 cents lower. And ethanol futures are up 0.3 cents when they finished at $1.36.7. Dow Jones Industrial Average down just about 214 points lower at 17,218. Gold around $1,282 is up $26.75. And the U.S. dollar index at 95.010 is down 0.01. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area, and we'll talk only about the winter storm watch. The National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a winter storm watch, which is in effect from Saturday evening through Sunday evening. Timing, snow should develop over the area Saturday night, and that'll continue through Sunday night. Accumulations, totals of 6 to 7 inches are possible north of Interstate 70, with 7 to 9 inches possible north of a line from Jacksonville to Danville. Winds will be gusty. They'll come out of the north to northwest at about 25 miles an hour on Sunday afternoon and into Sunday evening. Of course, that'll cause blowing and drifting of the snow. Beginning Saturday night, roads will become snow-covered. They'll be hazardous. Visibilities could be really poor due to the blowing and drifting snow, especially if you're out in those open areas and happen to live in the countryside.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
It's a Friday afternoon, the 30th day of January. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello there, Todd.
Well, you're far enough back to the west. What kind of conditions are you going to suffer through, if any?
We don't know, Todd. That's the problem is, you know, you pay all this high dollar money for these weather models, and one says 1 inch of snow and the other says 10 inches of snow, and that's as of about an hour ago. So I think we're just going to have to go back to the old-fashioned of wait and see. So
I think
the trade is expecting that the precip will be mostly liquid, and that's why I think we didn't see any kind of a better outcome in the wheat market, especially today after that drought monitor map came out and showed us growing in the Corn Belt in the Midwest by about 21% in drought versus last week. And the Southern Plains, the hard red wheat belt, grew about 3 to 4%, but no one even talked about that I talked to in Chicago today.
Yeah, so you're keeping an eye on it. It's something that traders will take notice of eventually if it persists. But as the climatologists tell us, I suppose one good rain in the spring really takes care of a lot of dryness, unless it's really deep. So I suppose this is just the beginning of the process, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly where the trade is at, especially with this storm coming across, with the idea that, you know, northern Missouri, central northern Illinois may be the hardest hit with the snow, which would and rain, which could, you know, give them another inch and a half of equivalent liquid precip, and all of a sudden they're back out of the drought. But yeah, I think that's exactly where the trade's at as well.
Much impact in the livestock sector from the discussion of the weather?
No. In fact, we had our semi-annual cattle report inventory numbers that just came out a few minutes ago, and I think the trade was really ramping up for that. And interesting to note that the crude oil helped the cattle. The stable dollar didn't help the cattle very much, but the fat cattle were able to close higher on the week and really pull out one after a very volatile week. And I think maybe they were expecting a friendly report on today from USDA. I don't think they got that report, though, because total cattle and calf inventory came in at 89.8 million head. Trade was thinking 87.6, so instead of getting 100% of a year ago numbers, we got 101%. And probably the biggest number that is going to stand out to the analysts is that heifers 500 pounds and over for beef cow replacement expected to calve up to 107%. So a big, big herd expected here in 2017, late 2016. So I wonder whether the fat cattle can keep their gains that they made this week given this report today.
So beef producers really finally responding big time to the big prices that they have been seeing for a while, and the lower corn prices and all the rest of the inputs too, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the Southern Plains producers I deal with really haven't gotten, cattlemen I should say, ranchers, haven't really gotten behind increasing their herd that much. I'm guessing the vast majority of this 7% increase on those replacement heifers when it comes to the beef cows is going to be in the Midwest and maybe even in the Northern Plains, and maybe we've seen that herd shift because of that drought from the past 4 or 5 years in the Southern Plains.
Yeah, so the Southern Plains, Texas, we talked about that a lot, emptied out. The pastures, that was 09, 10, 11, 12, something along those lines, even into 13, if I remember correctly. Long-term drought in that area. Moved those cattle out. Some of them, of course, went into the plains and into the northwestern parts of the Corn Belt. It appears maybe you're thinking they've stayed there in that case.
I think so. I haven't looked at the state-by-state numbers yet because it just came out about 15 minutes ago, but I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of producers, cattle ranchers in Missouri and Kansas, that I've spoken with here in the last year or so, they've really been putting a lot on the ground, and more expected to be put on the ground as we get closer to grass season out here.
Yeah, I shouldn't say they stayed there. They've been replaced there. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. We'll be technical about it. I knew what you meant.
I know you did. Okay, so turn your attention to the grains and the oil seeds. Which was more interesting to you today?
Grains for sure, because we saw an amazing number come out from the Baker Hughes people that take care of the oil rig counts. We saw oil rig counts this week down 94. That's the most on a weekly basis since 1987. We've had 8 straight weeks of rig counts going down. We've had 13 out of the last 16 weeks of lower rig counts. We're now down to just over 1,200 rigs, oil rigs only, operating in the U.S., and that's the fewest since 2012. That brought about or helped bring about an 8.5% rally in the New York crude, the West Texas Intermediate. Late in today's session, we got up to 48.35. That took us back above the January 7th low. So we essentially gained back almost a month's worth of losses in just one day because of this rig count, I think because of the consumer confidence numbers, and also because the Department of Energy showed that the unleaded gas supplies actually fell last week. And so we saw the crude oil market really translate into the ethanol market very quickly, and we saw the corn go back to steady on the day. Corn couldn't do much better than that, and because the wheat market didn't really want to give up its losses. And I think also the dollar stayed pretty firm. But clearly the energy markets are playing a lot of role in the corn right now.
So translated how into the ethanol market? By a higher price?
Well, because the ethanol is now over the unleaded gas price, if the unleaded gas price goes back over ethanol, then your margins start to improve. And if your crude oil is leading that, that's even better in terms of the psychology of
right,
the trade.
Right, so it hasn't happened yet.
Hasn't happened yet, but we're on the verge of it. I think... You know, you're trading a market right now where the trade understands, by the most recent weekly update from the Department of Energy, we've got the biggest U.S. crude oil stocks in 80 years. Everybody knows that at this point. So now I think everybody's waiting to see, okay, how fast will the supplies be cut? Because we went down a record 7 months in a row the last 7 months, and we went up a record 7 months in a row in the U.S. dollar and have done the biggest move up in the dollar ever since we went to a free float exchange rate back in 1971. So we're really hitting some historical levels here at this point.
Have you looked at or do you know what usage consumption for gasoline in the United States is like by comparison to the last year or historically? Has the American public responded to the lower gasoline prices?
They have. I helped do an article earlier this week for a newspaper, and I want to say we're running about a little over 9 million barrels a day on implied consumption on the four-week average, and that is a very nice response. That's up 6 to 8%. Versus last year at this time. So, yeah, the lower crude translating into lower unleaded gas has helped the consumption. Now, I did talk to a client right before we went on the air in East Central Indiana, and he said his gasoline prices jumped about 30 cents a gallon just in the last 2 days. And that wouldn't surprise me because even though the refineries are running at about 90% capacity, we still had a drawdown in unleaded gas stocks this week.
Me, even locally, and I was coming back from the meeting in DeKalb County yesterday, I saw on the way back, let's see, the spread is about 20 cents, right? $1.89, I think, filled up for, but I saw more than one station at $2.09.
That makes sense.
So they're fluctuating. They're right in that middle. A middle ground where you're kind of have to hunt if you're looking for a lower price, but back above $2 again, which still doesn't sound too bad.
No, not at all.
In comparison to 380 or 410 or whatever. So.
No, and you can see by the monthly changes, you know, now that we've closed out January, we were down just under 7% in corn, just under 6% in lead month beans, almost 15% in wheat. So this is where the feed grain story really has been disappointing. Once again, the wheat has been the leader to the downside, and I rest and put almost all of that at the feet of the U.S. dollar and the index, the dollar index against the euro and all these central banks. And the investors are just getting more and more and more negative. The wheat demand, even though our four-week our export sales this week and wheat beat the four-week average by about 75%.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Sounds good, sir.
That, of course, is Mike Zuzlo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll help us take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural news. He's our director of agriculture for the WILO radio stations right here at Illinois Public Media.
The Environmental Protection Agency has published a draft of new rules that would require BT seed companies to institute new requirements, such as mandatory crop rotations or the use of pyramided BT hybrids for BT users in areas of high root worm pressure. The proposal is prompted by the continued development of Western corn rootworms that can tolerate BT proteins. The most stringent requirements would fall on farmers in red zones, where the risk of resistance is high because of widespread BT corn use and rootworm infestations. These areas include portions of Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska, western Indiana, southwestern Wisconsin, southern Minnesota, and eastern South Dakota. Here, companies would be required to ensure that 50% of their customers were rotating fields out of BT corn, most likely into soybeans, at least every 2 years. Companies would also have to prove that a quarter of their farmer customers were using multiple modes of action, such as a pyramided BT corn hybrid. Another quarter would be required to use a non-BT corn hybrid combined with a soil-applied insecticide. The proposal also lowers the damage threshold that would prompt growers to report unexpected rootworm damage on BT hybrids to companies. The agency's proposal is open for public comment through March 16th. Brazilian agricultural consultancy Safras cut its forecasts for the size of the country's soy and corn harvests in the 2014-15 growing season today. Brazilian farmers will produce 95.02 million tons of soy. That's an increase from the 86.6 million tons grown last year, but less than the December forecast of 95.9 million tons. Brazil's farms will produce 74.7 million tons of corn in the 14-15 season. That's a decline from the 77.2 million tons of corn grown last year and less than the November forecast of 75.7 million tons. Potash Corporation of Saskatchewan raised its quarterly payout and said fourth quarter earnings jumped 77%, fueled by record potash sales volumes and higher prices for all three of its key fertilizer nutrients. Potash sales volumes reached a fourth quarter record of 2.5 million metric tons. Potash Corporation's earnings jumped to $407 million, or 49 cents a share, from $230 million, or 26 cents a share a year earlier. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. He also puts together our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. That's scheduled for the 10th day of March. If you haven't received your tickets yet or ordered them, please do give us a call at 217-333-7300. They're going pretty quickly, just $25 a person for our all-day Ag Outlook, a great event at the Beef House in March. On the 10th day of that month, that also happens to be USDA Report Day, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Day. We'll hear more about that in just a moment from John Newton, but a couple of other reminders. Next week, I'll be on the road again, this time around at the Illinois Pork Expo. That's in Peoria. I'm on the 4th day of February. I'll be there at 1:30. We'll have our regular panel of analysts to take up the hog market. We'll discuss the grain market as well. That's at the Pork Expo on the convention. convention floor at 1:30 on Wednesday, February the 4th in Peoria. On February the 5th, I'll be in Springfield that evening at 6:30. We'll be there at the Northfield Inn and Suites with Matt Bennett, Kurt Kimmel, and Bill Mayer. This one's sponsored by Strategic Farm Marketing. Again, starts at 6:30. It's open free to everybody. So if you want to come and you're in the Springfield area, that's next Thursday at 6:30. We'll be at the Northfield Inn and Suites. And then on February the 7th, which is Saturday, we'll be at the Weitendorf Agricultural Education Center at Joliet Junior College with a 9 a.m. panel. Matt Bennett, Chuck Shelby, and Gary Schnitke will be there. That's with the Chicago Farmers Farmland Forum. There is a cost to get into that one, but it should be a great morning with the Chicago Farmers at their Farmland Forum. You can search Chicago Farmers online to find out the details of the Farmland Forum. Come visit us. We'll be there at 9 o'clock with Matt Bennett, Chuck Shelby, and Gary Schnitke on February the 7th. That's a Saturday morning in Joliet, Illinois. You know, following the January 12th USDA crop production and grain stocks reports, it's become increasingly clear that the story in the corn and soybean markets for the foreseeable future will be the ongoing pace of consumption. A consumption of corn produced in the United States can be tallied as corn used for ethanol, fed to livestock, or exported. The soybean consumption numbers are derived from an item called the crush. That's when a soybean facility crushes the bean to extract the oil and meal from it. There's also the feed and residual number, and again, exports. University of Illinois ag economist John Newton has explored the export figures. He says holding all else constant, a lower rate of corn and soybean exports relative to current USDA projections would increase carryover stocks and could produce downward pressure on prices. USDA, as of the January reports, expects corn exports will be 1.75 billion or 1,750 million bushels for the current marketing year. Newton also says right now, the actual numbers suggest corn exports will need to pick up to make it to 1750.
So with 40% of the marketing year in the books, corn exports need to accelerate in order to reach the 1750 million bushel WASDE mark. Based on the implied estimate of 602 million bushels, we have 1,148 million bushels need to be exported during the remainder of the marketing year in order to reach the WASDE projection. On a weekly basis, this total represents approximately 37 million bushels a week and would require an increase of 57% over the 10-week average export volume.
Again, in order to meet the USDA projected yearly exports total of 1.75 billion bushels, the pace of corn exports needs to average about 37 million bushels a week from mid-January forward. Using a similar set of calculations, John Newton reports cumulative soybean exports for the 2014-15 marketing year total 1.312 billion bushels. That's up 18% from last year.
Based on the inspection totals to reach the 1770 million bushel WASDE projection, 458 million bushels of soybean need to be exported during the remainder of the marketing year. On a weekly basis, this total represents approximately 15 million bushels per week.
While corn exports are accelerating, the pace of soybean exports from U.S. ports is slowing down. Combining the outstanding sales with the remaining balance needed, Newton expects sales could come up some 42 million bushels short of the WASDE projection. He thinks soybean exports will struggle to meet the lofty 1.77 billion bushel USDA estimate, but that it is entirely possible to do still.
Now, if you'd like to learn more about what John Newton and Daryl Good have to say on the exports, you can do that on the Farm Doc Daily website. The address there is www.farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I urge you to visit and our website, too, at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's check now the cash grain market. Ben Pruce is here from the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility. Thanks, Ben, for taking the time with us today. How's your ethanol plant been running in the last month?
They continue to run full bore here a little bit. We're kind of struggling. I made mention of it last week, and actually the last couple of weeks, as the basis continues to get soggy, we are seeing just a tremendous influx of corn coming out of southeast South Dakota and southwest Minnesota.
When you talk to the Andersons facilities in other parts of the nation, they're under differing conditions than the ethanol plants that surround your Anderson facility.
Yes, very much so.
And why do we suppose this is the case?
Honestly, I think it's we had just such a, quite honestly, eastern South Dakota had just such a tremendous crop. There's just a local truck house 50 miles west of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and their corn posted basis is 55 under today. I mean, we're posted at 20 under here in northwest Iowa. She's paying short unders, and for those guys, it's a saving grace because they're finally able to get corn out of their bins for once.
All right, and what are your bids for the day?
We're 348 cash corn, 911 cash beans.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Ben Pruce. He's with the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility and joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. Stay with us. We'll be back with the weather forecast and Ed Kieser in just a moment. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 30th day of January 2015. It's a Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, inviting you to visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find all of our events that are upcoming, including the Pork Expo next week, along with an evening event in Springfield on Thursday night, and will be Saturday morning in Joliet at the Chicago Farmers Farmland Forum. Find out all the details at willag.org. And while you're there, make sure you look at what's happening March the 10th for our all-day Ag Outlook. That's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Tickets on sale now at 217-333-7300. They're just $25 a seat. Now here's meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather forecast for South America.
Last week we talked about a likely change in the weather pattern that would bring needed rain to dry areas and a break in rain to wet areas. That change is evolving in Brazil, but not yet to the extent that was expected. Rainfall last weekend and early this week was less than anticipated across center-west, southeast, and northeast Brazil. While scattered thunderstorms did occur, underlying longer-term dryness remained. That is now finally changing. Widespread thunderstorms moved into center-west and southeast Brazil at midweek, especially in Mato Grosso do Sul and Sao Paulo. That is the beginning of a weather pattern shift to increased rainfall. Thunderstorms are expected on a more frequent basis across center-west and southeast Brazil next week, so that should stop a further decline in crop conditions. Meanwhile, in northeast Brazil, including Bahia, mostly dry weather will continue through this weekend. That is an area in desperate need of rain, as little has fallen so far this month. It is likely some needed rain will finally arrive next week. Bahia is where adverse effects from dryness on first crop corn and soybeans will be the greatest. Farther south, adequate to surplus rainfall will continue in the coming week across South Brazil and neighboring Paraguay. The heaviest rains should shift northward a little from waterlogged Rio Grande do Sul and Santa Catarina to less soaked Paraná. That means problems should not increase in scope in the coming week. For Argentina, the weather has been mixed of late, and that will continue. Heat waves have only lasted a few days, followed by periods of cool weather. none of the hot or cool spells have lasted long enough to become problematic. Rainfall in the past week was again heaviest to the north and lightest to the south, sustaining some wet and dry pockets. Mostly dry weather has prevailed in all areas in recent days, giving wet pockets a chance to shrink in size. In the coming week, it appears that scattered thunderstorms will occur at times across Argentina when cold fronts push through after brief warm spells. Rainfall will continue to be greatest to the north and lightest to the south. While not ideal, problems should remain localized through next week. The major central Argentina corn and soybean production areas of Cordoba, Santa Fe, and Entre Rios should have near to slightly below average rainfall next week.
Our thanks go to Ed Kieser for his update at the South American weather forecast. Stay with us here on our own home radio station, if you can, for Commodity Week. We recorded yesterday in DeKalb at the Center for Agriculture. If not, tomorrow morning on many of these radio stations. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.